You've been very kind with your time. I've just checked my watch. We're about 2 hours, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. Let me ask, in all of the matters that you've handled here, what impact has this had on you personally when you look back at the person you were 10 years ago and the person you are now?
I think my wife would answer that question a little better than I would. I think I've taken a lot of things for granted. And I may not have realized how much of a toll this certainly has taken. It's extremely difficult, difficult to be able to deal with crime. And like I say to people, I lost my dad in May 2005, and I was amazed that. I'm an only child, and I was amazed at how I received a phone call right here in Arusha to say, well, your dad is ill. And I got on a flight to Lagos from Nairobi, and then got to Lagos, and he had died like hours before.
Mm.
And right there, I had to go to the hospital, deal with having his body moved from the hospital to a mortuary, because he had died in a hospital that didn't have its own mortuary, and just hit the ground running, making the arrangements, as taking charge of my mom, taking charge of the family, making the arrangements for his funeral, and I was just go, 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 go. And at the end of all this, having not shed a tear and buried him, I was thinking, where did you derive that strength from? You know, and in retrospect, having dealt with things like this for so many years, talking to victims of such heinous crimes, women, kids, husband killing, child, wife killing, brother killing, and you think, gosh, I've become so cold and hardened to some of the things that would break any human being. And it's only from experiences like that you rewind and you think, where did I derive that strength from? And it's got to be this sort of work. It's perhaps, apart from being humbling, it's perhaps one of the most trying things you could ever, having to sit down with witnesses day in, day out, that just relieve their experiences. And, you know, to be able to help them tell their story, you literally have to put yourself in their position and visualize what they went through. And it's very difficult.
Just tear your heart out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
One last question. We had a marvelous interview with a judge the other day who indicated someone had given him a gift of the Iliad and the Odyssey, and he reread that. He'd read it before, of course, in school. And after he finished it, he reflected and said, things have not really changed much from those days. Do you share the same view? Do you have hope for something better from what you've seen?
Well, I do have hope. I worry about Rwanda, and I've shared that with many people. I'm happy from what I've seen that the country seems hell-bent on moving on and developing themselves and moving on from being known or recognized for genocide. But I worry as to whether or not they're healing. And I have reason to know because of the work that I've done. I've had the privilege, and I must be one of the very few people who have been able to look at the Rwanda story from both sides. Haven't been in the tribunal for 10 years and prosecuted 10 cases. The prosecutor then got me involved with the RPF files, which was the other side. And I had those files for 18 months, and I headed in special investigations for 18 months. And so I have a unique opportunity to actually look at this whole story from two different angles. That aside, and without making any specific reference to the merits or demerits of the whole genocide story, one wonders, on a broad scale, if they're healing, if there is healing, if there's reconciliation. And if so, how healed are people? Is there a prospect that Rwandans will be reconciled? I say this to my Rwandan colleagues, be they Hutu or Tutsi, and I asked them, I said, when I was investigating the RPF files, I would go out and talk to people in the diaspora. Because now I'm looking at the other side. And they will tell me things, not about the RPF files, but about the RPF and about the Tutsi and about the government of the day. And they would tell me things that they're telling their children. And I would walk away from that interview or that meeting, and I would sit on a plane and I would say to myself, isn't this the same old story? Wasn't this what these guys were telling their children when they were out there? And I'm hearing this in 2007 and 2008 from a guy sitting in Montreal or in London or in Quebec. And he's telling me how even if I don't go back, my children have to go back. And he's not sounding like he's reconciled or like he's come to terms with the situation. And I sense vengeance. And I sense revenge. And I sit down and I worry. And I certainly don't want to be doing this in 20 years be involved in things like this. I had thought that this whole system of international justice would deal very adequately with the problem. And I'm very happy for Rwanda in terms of the economic development. I'm very happy with the pace of the economic development, but I'm worried about the reconciliation.
Perhaps reconciliation is too broad a term.
Maybe it is.
And one wise person I spoke to in Rwanda said, reconciliation, perhaps, learning to live together, probably. Let's hope at least.
Absolutely.
Let's hope.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And another way to look at it is that the country may become so important economically that in itself may help to build bridges and reconcile people, and that there might be so much economic buoyancy that may pacify ill feeling. But there's a lot of division.
Yes.
I sense it from the work I've done on both sides. There's a lot of division, and I hope that we've done our own little quota to help solve the problem.
You've been very kind. I could continue this discussion for hours, literally, but I think we have a film problem as well. So let me thank you so much.
Thank you, sir, for having me. Thank you very much. Thank you.